This is Due by Friday, a weekly challenge podcast with Merlin Mann, Alex Cox, and Max Temkin. This week's challenge, play Clash Royale.
I had I was going to say friend, but it's like an acquaintance. It was like a girl who attended high school in my class who I probably said all of six words to in 4 years we went to high school together. She friend requested me on Instagram, on my private Instagram, which please do not find it or look it up or ask to follow me because I'm just, it just makes, just slows me down. Just saying,
you
just
understand
declining
how this
everyone.
Works, Max.
I don't.
Please do not. Please, God. Nobody listening to this, please do not request to follow my private Instagram. I'm not interested. That's why it's private. I did click on her profile. And her Instagram name is something like, it's like, it's like,
don't get too close.
I'm not saying what
don't
it is. It's like,
close.
It's something like the twin mom. And her whole identity is that she either has twins or it's possible she babysits for twins. I'm not sure.
I don't know which is
but
worse.
It's
really.
Like she's constructed an entire identity for herself.
She has a maternal clone.
She has like lots of like posts of like giving away a double stroller from the Gerber Corporation or something like that. It's crazy. It's like a whole identity. Like I was looking at this and I was like, it's amazing that you can string together a whole identity just on accidentally having had twins. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah. You don't have, that's like not, it's not like an accomplishment. Like it's, I don't know, like it's random
chance,
basically.
It's IVF. Yeah.
Where's my parade?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, yeah. And so without too much bad opsec, do you remember what her profile image is? Is there any chance it's her with babies?
Oh, it's 100% it's her with babies. I don't remember the exact configuration. Alex, don't you also get distracted by this.
No,
I'm like while I'm telling my story, I'm also trying to repair a piece of studio equipment that I just noticed. And now Alex is also doing it.
Nice.
You're off mic though. Alex, I'm a pro. I have 10,000 hours. I've driven in my car and played iPhone games. 10,000 hours.
Okay,
I can do a podcast and fix this piece of studio equipment. All right,
Merlin,
Learn from me, Grasshopper.
It's Merlin. It's as if one of our microphones, like the 4 hours are up, and it has gone all limp dick, and it's making me very nervous. Nothing bad would happen.
You're saying it's work week is over and now it's just doing passive income.
Yeah. Okay. It would fall less. It would fall about 3 centimeters, but it's still.
Oh, you made a penis joke. I thought you made a Tim Ferriss joke. Okay, I understand. It's becoming.
I pivoted, though. I pivoted.
You did. You took it and you turned it. That was good.
Yep. I'm a very funny person, Merlin. Oh, Merlin,
that's right.
Can we
I have
talk
a Lambo
about
here in the Hollywood Hills?
can we please talk about your video game joke that I found very, very funny and I was very impressed by?
Merlin, video game joke. Merlin, play video games.
All right.
Sure, absolutely. Bring it up.
I was confused by this too because I fixed it. No one even noticed.
Yay.
I was gone.
Yeah.
I was very confused by this video game joke too because it's a very specific reference and you don't play those games. You don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
No. And actually,
did
you know what I did?
Write that joke for you?
No. Syracuse. Don't get me started on Syracuse.
Pause.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
I did not. A while ago, I sent you a photograph of myself flipping off you in an Apple store with an ATP shirt on, and I thought you'd send it maybe to Casey, who I'm on a fuck you basis with, but you sent that to John Syracuse. I don't want to say fuck you to John Syracuse.
Oh, he doesn't have human feelings. He's a pod. He's like Kramer. He's a pod. No, don't worry about that. I do not understand the use of this particular human digit. I mean finger. What is this disrespect for my program? Mm-hmm. No, he's bad. No, it's that. I consider myself a gamer. I'm not a hardcore gamer anymore. It took me a week to get through the training of an iPhone game. That was fun, and I'm a hardcore gamer, but I'm very bummed by The Walking Dead, and that's the situation.
Have we talked about The Walking Dead on the show?
I said something like they're in like their third episode of the season, and I have not finished any of them. I fell asleep. I think I mentioned I fell asleep 3 times in episode 2, and then I got up and ate some clam chowder. QED. So the problem is, I said I think it looks like cutscenes from an first-person shooter game for Xbox that was never released. It's just all like, let's have a speech for a little while and then some shooty shoot shoot. And it's just like, I'd be happy to talk about it. I think the show has lost the thread. I know that there are competent, very intelligent show people running it, but it's lost the thread for me about what I like about that show.
So I've never really watched The Walking Dead. I think I watched I watched the first four episodes at
one point. There's some very good seasons, like whole long seasons that are very, very good and get to the heart of what makes that show special.
So, I mean, I did see a chart going around the internet maybe a year ago or so, and it basically looked at every state, like what the top TV shows are, and it's pretty incredible divide. I mean, like everything else, like America is sliced up pretty neatly among like blue team and red team, and you have your shows that, you know, that we talk about on here, you know, like The Bachelorette and Project Runway and Game of Thrones. Those are going to be your blue team shows, and Walking Dead is for sure the number one red team show in America. I mean, red states fucking love Walking Dead. It dominates. And I think it does play into some... There's something really grim and upsetting about it, and I think it does really play into some sort of, like, red... It's like a combination of, like a fetish for violence and a desire to kill without remorse and without consequences. How just how neato and how cool it would be to like mow down a crowd of people with a shotgun, but you're allowed to fantasize about it because they're zombies. So they're in all other ways human beings, but they don't have the one critical piece of consciousness that makes it bad to kill them. So that's number one.
Voting rights.
That's number one, but then number I think it's like the fantasy. Well, and this was like on the Chapo episode that we both liked about their people's fantasies of, oh, I wish these Antifa people would come into my house, you know, where everyone has these violent machinations that they'd never be able to enact. So I think that's like one side of it, and then the flip side is a sort of paranoia of not being able to trust your neighbors, and people turn on each other at a moment's notice, and you have to be sort of fearful about engaging in a society because the constructs of society could collapse at any moment and people are going to loot you for your resources and all of that. Like, I think that sort of twin fantasy makes it very appealing for Red Team and plays into like culturally a lot of what they're feeling about the country right now, and it just holds no appeal to me. I find it to be like totally grim and hopeless and humorless. Like, there's never a fucking laugh in that show. Like, at least in Game of Thrones there's moments of levity where it like lets a little bit of pressure off.
I disagree. First of all, I couldn't watch the show for a long time. My wife has watched it for years, and I just couldn't take it. It was, even when the effects weren't that good, it was too much, and I couldn't get into it. I mean, I could. There's a point of view into what you're saying. I don't doubt that there are people who watch it just because there's lots of killing and whatever. But like any show that one is very familiar with, you feel something different about it. I think the appeal of that show is that it is a hope. Apocalyptic literature is a thing, right? And the thing that makes apocalyptic literature what it is that there is no hope. And like, you kind of know that going in. So you could look at something like The Road and go, oh gosh, I hope this has a happy ending. But like, you read it anyway, because that's what the book is about, right? So with this, I mean, I think the core thing of the show is, and I mean, this is not a huge spoiler, but at a certain point, they learn not only is whatever caused this, there are people who have turned into walkers, and we have to kill them through the brain. And what we didn't learn for a little while, maybe into the second season, I forget when, is that anybody who dies... Anybody who dies reanimates as a walker. That's when the show, in some ways, really lit up. Because think about that for a minute, right? I don't know if you got that far in it, but I feel like that was a big turning point for the show. Because in addition to that grimness and the way everybody, every single one of these people, unless they get it through the brain, is going to turn into, like when your kid just dies of hunger, your kid is going to turn into a walker and you're going to have to kill it or run away. So there's something, the oppressiveness of that is... played against the fact that we care so much about some of these characters, and you know, you can turn this to your point of view for sure, but like
we should have done a Last of Us challenge instead of a
I really want to, I got the game.
Oh,
I would love to play it.
That's
oh
a
would,
good boy idea.
Okay, I got the
boy
game.
are you gonna hate the opening of that game?
Oh
yeah, I've got it on the PS4. But all I was going to say was that, and so if you're, for this show, okay, same reason, okay, I know we don't have time to talk about Top Dress, but I have a big beef anytime on a reality show. It's one thing to have a Tim Gunn save per season. I think that is a great device, and it's usually very well deployed, even though the person usually gets kicked off the next week for some reason. But I don't like it when they go, oh, you know what? There's five people, and two of you are going home today. And then guess what? Hey, everybody gets to go to the finals. Yay! okay, that's not a game where you just get to go, oh, suddenly, like, my rook is a queen. I have five queens now. Like, that's not a game if you can do that. That's Calvin Ball. And that's what the game, that's one thing this show has done, is that it has really started shying. When it does kill off characters, it does it in one case at the end of the previous season, the most horrible, gruesome way. But then also,
are you talking about Handsome Bat Boy?
Well, yeah, Handsome Bat Boy. I'm talking about the comedian. Yeah, who's
we're not talking about Top Dress anymore.
Well, I'm just saying, like, there should be the stakes that anybody could die.
Are they killing people off now? Does Heidi need to feed?
I have concerns.
I'm sorry to share a quick list with you.
Cut all of that out, Alex.
I think you both have good viewpoints on why this show is bad. Mine could be summed.
Okay, so let me just finish the rant then. Here's the rant. Let me finish
okay,
this. It's really fast.
Rant,
this is really
go.
Fast. Here's
go,
the fucking problem.
It.
The problem is you've got to kill off people that you don't want killed off, and you can't suddenly introduce literally thousands of bullets. How does everyone suddenly have thousands of bullets? You've ruined this game.
You want me to ruin Game of Thrones for you?
Yes.
Now, a character hasn't died in Game of Thrones since, like, season 4.
What?
Yeah.
They're all in the Upside Down? What?
You think of it as a show where they, like, kill characters all the time, and the thing is they've done it a few times to great effect.
Did you see the episode with the Sept?
Oh, yeah, that's true. That was a big one.
I was going to say.
It took a few pieces off the board
on
that one.
None of those were. I'm trying not to spoil. I'm trying to. I know people will get really mad at us if we say
all
spoilers.
Say,
none of those
what
were
you can
like
say
major
is Daenerys and Jon are not in huge trouble.
I'm talking about main cast.
You're talking
characters.
About Daenerys and Jon Snow. They're not going to die.
Right.
Yeah, they can't.
It's let a little bit of tension out of the show because you kind of know that they're not going to die.
You're absolutely right. I don't think Jaime is going to die anytime soon. I'm sorry, we're saying too much. But there are tentpole characters on that show that are not going away anytime soon.
It's like if you build a whole... this is something I really admire about Breaking Bad. I mean, Breaking Bad was just such an incredible, like, taut drama. And it was like a lot of the drama of Breaking Bad came from... I mean, it worked on a lot of angles. But it was like the dual stakes of, like, Walt's, like, how far is his, like, moral... How far is he going to slide? But then also, like, his life was constantly in peril, and you bought it every time. Like, they somehow managed to, like, ratchet the tension up on when Walt's life was threatened every time to where you were just glued to the TV, just sweating it out.
Yeah.
And most shows, I think it was because it was, like, a marriage of, like, personal stakes and then you know, sort of big, big life-threatening stakes. And most shows cannot pull that off and sustain that. Like, certainly, like, I didn't care in The Walking Dead because I didn't like any of the characters. But Game of Thrones really has this problem of, like, how many times
so
can
many
you have them...
so many characters on there.
My favorite character died last season.
Maybe I didn't watch enough of it.
I think it is. I mean, Syracuse and I, every time we talk about The Walking Dead, we always talk about this one character who's been in it from the first episode. And everybody thought, if there's one person apart from Rick who's going to make it to the end, it's the ultimate survivor. It's this one guy. Is that who you're thinking of?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was talking about Game of Thrones. I kind of hate everybody on The Walking Dead.
I've been talking about Top Dress the whole time.
Wait, which one am I?
Boy, I like that. I like that Kentaro. I thought maybe he was going to be a ding-a-ling at the beginning of the season. And I really love him, and I think he makes really interesting stuff.
He always mentions that he's a concert pianist and that he's a classical pianist. Every time he comes on screen, my daughter says, "Is it true you're a classical pianist?" I said, "Yes, I'm a concert pianist."
Didn't you
he's
like?
Good.
He,
Did
you
like
you
his song about the cat?
Yeah, wasn't it great when he played his little song for Tim Gunn?
That was such a... Have you seen this, Alex?
No, the thing is, so Matt's watching it, but I can't watch it because there's no way it can live up to what this season is in my head because of the two of you. So I'm just watching Shark Tank.
Okay, that's cool.
People.
Shark Tank's been good this season.
It has.
I like the rotating shark.
Yeah, I do too.
Cold Bodies, Creeper, Dead Ones, Floaters, Geek, Lame Brains, Lurkers, Monsters, Roamers, Rotters, Skin Eaters, and Biters, and finally Walkers. They can't just call them fucking zombies.
They
like,
don't do it. They won't do it.
Not one person. Just one person.
I thought you were doing street names for some kind of new drug.
Yeah.
That was a nice tea thing. The kids call it couch cushion.
What I've been binging lately is a couple years ago, FX re-released a sort of re-edited cut of the entire Ali G show, the series where he has, you know, it's Ali G, Borat.
Pat Buchanan.
Yeah. And Bruno. If you haven't seen this, I really think it's one of the most incredible comedy bodies. It's like two seasons of British television.
He's so committed.
It's unbelievable. And you'd think it would have worn thin now that the Borat character is so like played out. But nope, it's just as good as it ever was. And I was watching the one where he's Ali G and he has a panel of religious hosts. So there's like a priest, an atheist, secular humanist, all these people like, you know, on the couch, and he's doing like, he has them in the studio for like a talk show format. And then he just starts accusing. So he's like, someone didn't flush. And he interrogates each person about who left the floater in the toilet. Holy shit. It's so funny.
It's one of those. It's kind of that sense of humor, though, where like so many of us are forced to revisit things we've thought of as things that we love, like that haven't really aged well. Like if you go back and watch Animal House, it's really not as funny anymore. Maybe it shouldn't have ever been. But the problem is, like, it's like Sloan says, it's not the band I hate, it's their fans. And the people who got into my wife, like, just as much as the whole, like, you know, oh, behave. Like, it's, you miss what was special about that show, which is that it was, that guy's working at a pretty high level. The humor was very silly, but, like, he's playing a whole different game on that show.
It may be, like, the all-time best skewering of, sort of conservatives, he because like I think what the game he figured out as the show progressed was like all three of his characters he could make Ali G, well Bruno's the exception actually, but he could make Ali G and Borat because of their backgrounds mm-hmm. as like awful and retrograde as you could possibly imagine.
It forces people to explain themselves right. in a way that is extremely revealing.
Right, but so like Borat goes to a gun club in the South, right? And he says to the gun owner, he goes, "In my country, in Kazakhstan, at the gun club, they bring prisoners, and you can execute the prisoners." And the gun club owner, first he's shocked, and then Borat goes, "Why are you shocked? Why don't you do that?" And he goes, "You know, it would be pretty awesome." Like, and then he high fives him, and he gets him all excited about it. It's just the perfect character. Like he can be as like. As like backwards as possible, and then these people like first they like accept the reality of Borat, that he's just this real guy from Kazakhstan, and that they never question that it's a bit being done to them, right. Which is amazing on its face. But then they like agree with him. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's also the thing that's tough about that though is that like any of us who have tried to lubricate a social situation. It gets awkward because sometimes you end up saying things you don't want to say. Like, how many times have you just nodded along with something that a cab driver says just because you don't really want to talk about it anymore? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And mm-hmm. they said something maybe even very offensive or very hateful, but you're like, yeah, people are crazy. I'm going to put my headphones in. Just, you know, holler if you need me. But like to get into these, what are you going to do? I mean, there are a lot of people today who would have that argument. I tend to not want to have that argument. But like if you do try to like find a common ground with somebody, you end up going much further in a direction than you'd want to go. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's what makes it so awkward.
I have never seen Borat.
Really?
Nope.
It's on my Plex.
I need to...
You've never seen the movie or the TV show or any of it?
None of it.
I think you'd really like it.
Ali G is a good, I mean, the Ali G show and the Ali G character is kind of a good place to start. I feel like you appreciate Borat more when you've seen Ali G.
So... And the key difference to me is on the TV show, it was made for British television, and you know the British do not need a likable protagonist. In fact, a lot of their comedy is based on not having a likable protagonist.
That's
so, like
true.
The British Office, right? There's no likable protagonist on that show.
Wow.
What's his name? The Michael Scott character.
Yeah,
David Brent.
I mean, David. Right, David Brent. He's like
type up your CV.
You absolutely fucking hate him. I mean, you're just cringing the whole time.
I love that show so much. I love it so much.
And they tried to recreate that with the American Office with Steve Carell when he had his like you know thinned out haircut and he was being a real jackass. But eventually, the show never worked until it found its heart, until it made Michael into a likable.
So they stopped trying
character.
To recreate the British. I mean, the first. I feel like right. at least the first episode was just a terrible remake of the absolutely. Classic first episode of The Office, the British, the UK Office.
Well,
and yeah, you're right. They didn't get their feet under them until they decided to like make use of what those different characters. How Dwight is not Gareth. Like those are very different characters.
Right. Americans need a likable protagonist in order to accept a comedy. And Borat, the movie was made for an American audience. And I'm not saying that he's likable, but he's like more of a cartoon, and he has
a
backstory. Yeah, but he's like. Can't go home, and he's trapped, and you do sort of feel for the character, and he does walk the line of putting himself in these situations where he's sort of the protagonist. or he's like hapless. Whereas like in the British version, you're just free to hate all of these characters. Like they're all awful.
I just realized that British reality TV is the exact opposite. It's so weird. And I'm looking at the only show, British show I watch, and I watch a lot of British TV that has a likable protagonist is Doctor Who. Well, I guess it's arguable. Oh, I guess Downton Abbey.
Well, you got the British Bake Off show. I love
exactly,
that show.
Exactly, yeah.
It's very gentle.
You think that Mary Berry makes the desserts that she shows when they go, ooh,
when she and Johnny Millionaire sit down?
Yeah.
No, I do not. I do not.
That's very disappointing to
me. I think we're meant to feel that, what's his name, Johnny Thanksgiving? And her have made, like, somebody fancy has made the one that's the good bake that they're enjoying while the other people are sweating it.
He's a bit of a pan man.
Oh, he's such a pan man. I've really changed my, you know, I feel bad about everything I said about Guy Fieri. He seems like a very nice man. I think I've been hard on Guy Fieri, the character. When he, you know, he's apparently like a super nice guy and he does lots of nice things for people and gay marriage and stuff. You know about all that?
Sure. Yes.
I remember when there was the Smash Mouth eat the eggs meme, he wound up cooking the eggs that Smash Mouth ate.
Mm. Oh.
Anyway.
great story, Matt.
I have a video game update. I can update about Destiny, or I also had a performance art story that could tie into the Borat conversation. Choose your fighter.
Well, Doug Dig, did you have any follow up from last week that you cannot get to, or is that after show material?
Yes.
Okay. All right, let's go with art piece.
All right, New York Post. Her performances may have been timeless feats of endurance, but the millions of Maria Abramovic raised to build her own art center didn't last long. A month after scrapping her plans for the Maria Abramovic Institute for the Preservation of Performance Art, MAI, in Hudson, New York, it seems that the $2.2 million raised towards the project were spent entirely on schematics and a model by star architect Rem Koolhaas, a far cry from the $31 million price tag for the whole project. First of all, you guys know who Maria Abramovic is, right?
Yes.
Should we explain it for our listeners?
Tweet link.
She's a very important performance artist who's very famous. She did the famous, probably her most famous pieces, The Artist is Present.
And there was a House episode based off of her.
Oh, there was?
Yeah.
That's incredible.
She does very, but instead of like, you think of performance art as like something from Seinfeld where people throw chocolate on people in the audience. Instead, she makes herself very open and vulnerable in ways that are like incredibly uncomfortable and really make
you think. She did a piece, I'm going to butcher this, but she did a piece where she sat in a gallery and suspended from the ceiling were, there were all sorts of things. There were like feather dusters and straps and knives and I think a gun and
there was another. I'm pretty sure there was a knife. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone did like slice her a bit.
Ugh. Yeah, and she just sat there and you could kind of the art was what people would do interacting with her in these objects, but so this is not a story. I'm actually not trying to drag Maria Abramovic. I think she's very cool. And I really like her art.
Projects are hard.
And well, I don't know how, I think she was probably, I don't know actually how much she was involved in like a management capacity of this Kickstarter project, but anyway, I do have a story, I do have a reason why I'm bringing this up on Dubai Friday and a place where this is going, but A, I just think it's funny, so they raised $2.2 million on Kickstarter and then they spent it all on schematics and a model like Zoolander. What is this, a center for ants? the people can't fit in here. But it was also funny, about $1.5 million of the funds raised came from private donations, including memorably from Jay-Z, while another $661,000 were raised from 4,765 backers on Kickstarter. However, because the Kickstarter campaign was specifically earmarked for, quote, the design process of MAI, it will not be returned to project backers. So the money has been spent, and they're not building the center. But this, you may remember this project for two other noteworthy things. Number one, Maria, one of the rewards was you could get a hug from Maria Abramovic, which she did at the Kickstarter office. So I got to see a bunch of my pals at Kickstarter.
Did you support it?
I did not. I missed it. I mean, it's actually something I probably would have given a couple bucks mm-hmm. to, but I did not see it when I was on Kickstarter. But I
yeah,
did see a bunch of our.
I missed this too.
I did see a bunch of our pals at Kickstarter like hugging Maria Abramovich, which is pretty fucking crazy, at their office. And then it's also notable. And here's the fun Due by Friday connection. So the top reward on the project was for $10,000. You could get us book a spirit dinner, a private spirit dinner with Maria Abramovich. Now, spirit dinner was a performance art piece that she did. I don't know, let's say in the 70s or 80s.
Oh.
And she did.
This is the pizza. This gets the pizza, right?
And it's made from, basically she would do recipes that were like intentional gestures that touched on spirituality, and she would make soup from a ball of light. And there were some of the recipes, there was like one of the recipes like has a reference to having like bodily fluids in it. Mm. Now, my understanding is that the spirit dinner that was offered on the Kickstarter was specifically that she would teach you how to make a series of traditional soups. So there were no that were like taught to her by a Tibetan monk. So I don't think that there was any bodily fluids involved. But one of the backers at the $10,000 level was prolific New York art collector Tony Podesta, brother of John Podesta.
Mm.
Now, Tony Podesta emailed John Podesta and said, "John, I backed Maria Abramovich's Kickstarter for $10,000. Do you want to come to the dinner?" And Podesta, I think, just didn't reply and didn't show up. But then the next day, there was another email. Tony said, "Oh, we missed you at the dinner," and Maria said hello. Now, how do we know this? John Podesta's emails were hacked during the 2016 election. Cut to 6 months later, during the whole Pizzagate controversy, people are going through these emails, and they see the two Podesta brothers. They're emailing each other, and they're like, oh, they're talking about the spirit dinner. They are using so where they went to is they're doing witchcraft with this witch, Maria Abramovich, and they're eating people and they're eating bodily fluids as part of their occult spirit dinner practice. And Hillary also probably partook in the spirit dinners. And because they were eating people and eating human brains, they got a rare brain disease, like also from an episode of House. I think it's called like you get like prions in your brain from eating human brains.
Right,
and
that's
why Hillary was falling over on 9/11.
Oh, see, she was at the spirit dinner. All that together. That totally makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah. I mean, is there another plausible explanation?
I mean, it could have been related to Uranium-1, but that's my only other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And the Clinton Foundation.
Oh, well, they're the central culprits.
They're the ones who stand to benefit? Are they the puppet masters? Is the idea that you eat a brain and have sex, pizza sex with babies so that you can fund your foundation?
All of these people are like the episode of Always Sunny where Charlie's working in the mail room. Pepe Silvia. All this mail, it's going to Pepe Silvia. Who's Pepe Silvia? We gotta find Pepe Silvia.
Did you see was it the representatives chart that was going around yesterday?
Holy shit. Well, it was on Hannity had a crazy walls.
Hannity had a crazy
wall.
Oh,
they're back? I missed them.
Well, he did a little bit of a Glenn Beck last night, but also, God, I wish I could find it. It was going around yesterday. Crooked did a very funny parody of it, but there was one of those, it was one of those big graphics. I think it was during one of the mini hearings yesterday, and this representative puts up this graphic that was so banana balls, and it was one of those, see, get it, Clinton, Obama, uranium, do you see, are you seeing this, people? Who was that, and let's find that, please. Do we know who that was?
No, I want to see the crazy wall. I'm trying to find, but all I'm getting is Keurig, all Keurig.
Oh, you're looking for Hannity did like a mind map on a giant graphic. Well, no, but I mean, it was done electronically. It's very professional.
Oh, I see.
That connects all the pieces. But I got to find this. Who was it? Okay, let go and let God. Representative conspiracy.
Have you guys ever, Merlin, you're not, you don't really do Kickstarters.
I've done a few. It generates a lot of email.
You know, you can turn that. I mean, so you can either do a Gmail filter or you can turn all that stuff off. I've turned it off from the Kickstarter app because I don't want to. I frankly never, I mean, I know part of the fun of a Kickstarter is, so like, listen, the way that normal human beings engage with Kickstarter is like once a year, something that you really care about, a band that you love makes an album, and you really love getting an email from them and learning about the process of them working on the album.
Yeah, like with Ted Leo and Jonathan Colton are two that I recently supported.
Right, and
it
there
wasn't
you go.
Necessarily Kickstarter, but those are two where I was like, yes, I 100% take my money, Ted.
And also, like, you want Ted Leo's updates because he's going to have interesting things to tell you about the process of that, of working on that album. But if you're sick like me and you back, you know, like I back like 10 Kickstarters a week.
You're a super backer.
I'm a super backer. I can't. Like, I can't and I won't. So I just turn it all off, and I understand I'm missing a big piece of the fun of the Kickstarter, but a lot of it is, like, I'm backing my friend's stuff or
if it's anything like the if it's anything like the way the Fidget Cube went, I'm happy to miss that fun.
Was that your first project?
No. My first project was something called Put This On.
I backed that. I love that
and
show.
Jesse Thorne did in, I think it was 1972, they did that. And I'm still getting email about it. I'm still getting a reminder that I need to go update my profile to get something from it. I'm glad I did that. I love those guys. But yeah, the Fidget Cube was tough for a variety of reasons. It ran really behind, and they were already very quickly getting knocked off on Amazon, like very, very quickly. So people saw it and went, oh, you know what? I can ship my own, like, off-brand Chinese version of this for like a tenth of it. But there were so many emails, and it's like cute release notes, you know, cute release notes. Like, if you're really watching an app to fix a bug and you get the release notes and they're cute, you just get so fucking angry. In this case, I was like, you know what? I never really wanted this that much in the first place. But now, several times a week, I get an update with animated GIFs about how it's not going as badly as it seems. And it was so depressing.
I will say, in defense of people who run late with their Kickstarters, and I'm sure the Dubai Friday audience are have probably some experience backing Kickstarters.
I totally feel. I'm not criticizing.
I know. I mean, what people don't understand is, like, so you take your best shot, right? You do all your math and you have your little solver and your Excel spreadsheet, and you're like, okay, if all of these factors work out, I will get this thing in hand and ship it out by December. But then what happens is when you do the Kickstarter, people start yelling at you and they're like, I want it in blue. And yeah. If enough people are yelling at you and they're like, I want it in blue, like I won't give you my money if it's not in blue, like you would be an idiot not to make it in blue and to make an option for blue. Well, now guess what? Now you're not shipping in December. Now you're shipping in March because you have no fucking clue. Once you have these contracts and these deals with manufacturers and everything's got to be come through customs, it's such a fucking ballet. And if one piece of the assembly line is, like, out of whack, then all the other it's like dominoes, right? At one thing stops, and then you lose your date with the next guy, and you lose your date with the next guy, and it's like you don't the creator doesn't have any control over that. Like, you're just as mad as the backers. Like, there's nothing you can do. Like, you're not people understand, like, if you're making a game on Kickstarter, that you're not actually working on the factory floor assembling it. You're just on the phone yelling at them the same as anyone could do. Sometimes people say every single one of my Kickstarters has run late by at least a month because of complications, production issues. I changed it because of what backers wanted. And then people are always like, the comment that always drives me nuts is they're like, oh, I saw that Max has time to tweet. Max had time to do a comedy show, but he didn't have time to ship our game. And it's like, you understand I'm not working on the factory floor. Like, I'm not, it's not as though, like, I'm logging the man hours of, like, stamping the pieces out of wood. Like, it's a factory, and I'm yelling at them to move as fast as they can, but what can I do? It's like, it's taking longer than it should. Like, I don't know what people want. Like, that is the adventure of getting a new product. Like, don't back a Kickstarter if you're not comfortable with the ups and downs, including that it may never get made. That's the fun of it. I think that's exciting,
deal is slightly queered by people like Pebble, who are using Kickstarter essentially just as a fulfillment service, where they've got this thing and they want people to order
it's not fulfilled. It's a pre-order, but I don't think it's bad. I mean, the only problem there would be
It's against the idea of, like, here's this thing we're going to be making. You're contributing to this thing as a group to make this happen at all.
Well, I personally don't agree with that. But you know, like, an example of where this criticism goes is, like, an example would be Zach Braff made a film or something on Kickstarter, and people were like, "You're a rich celebrity. Why would you need to do a Kickstarter?" And he was like, why aren't I allowed to have people back my art and find out if people want what I'm making like anyone else? And I agree with that. Like, Pebble's allowed to do it. The only thing I have to take any issue with at all is sometimes people, and Pebble, I don't know Pebble that well, but maybe they may or may not have been guilty of this. Sometimes people frame their whole project as a pre-order where they're like, buy it now, right? Like, you know, and I do think basically what is happening there is they're setting poor expectations for their backers. They're not managing the expectations of their backers correctly. But I don't think there's no limit of who's allowed to do a Kickstarter. I mean, listen, like, I'm a successful board game designer at this point, but I will still, every project I do will be on Kickstarter, because even though I've made some successful games, like, I have no fucking clue what people will want or how many to order or if I'm explaining it right. And Kickstarter is a way to find out. It's a way to put it out there and be like, hey, you people having this?
My favorite example of this is Obi by the Studio Neat Guys, which was this super smart laser toy for cats that nobody wanted except me.
Right.
And this is documented really well on their podcast with Relay. But they're like, yeah, this was a failure and we would have never known. And if we had just put this out.
Yeah, and you could say Studio Neat, they're one of the most successful product design companies on Kickstarter. They have smash hit products. They've probably done, I'm assuming they've done quite well for themselves.
I own, I think, four things from them.
I mean, I back everything. I back everything they did, including I bought a case of, I like the panel book so much, I bought a case.
I bought
a case of them for the office.
And they know that that's going to be successful, but they don't know how successful.
But they learned
that. When it's a hard good, I mean, this is the part of the problem with the comic industry, setting aside the fact that it's controlled by one distributing network, is, you know, local comic stores don't know how many of something to buy, and they can't return it if it's, you know, you make a cat toy or a notebook and you make too many of them, like, what are you going to do? Now you're not making money anymore.
I'm just going through the projects that I've backed. So
I sent you mine in the message.
I pretty much back about half of what Max backs.
So I've backed, let's see, on Kickstarter, 292 projects.
I have five.
I've made
109.
I've made seven projects.
I've made none.
I didn't even make breakfast today.
Yeah.
Jiminy. Ted Leo album. Ted Leo's good. Marshmallow Run. Fidget Cube. This is Fine Dog.
Did you hear him on Sound Opinions on NPR this weekend?
Yeah, I sure did. Boy, he's a hell of a guy, isn't he? Can you believe how deep his voice is, given how he sings? Doesn't that seem strange?
I love Ted Leo. And let me tell you a Don't Meet Your Heroes story. I met Ted Leo on the Joko Cruise this year, and I'm always a little reluctant to meet any musician that I like, because, especially if their music is, in addition to being, like, aesthetically pleasing to me, if I find it meaningful in any way, because musicians are some of the dumbest, least satisfying people as a category on the face of the planet.
That's not even counting the drummers.
And there's nothing worse. I don't want to perpetuate a stereotype, but there's nothing worse than meeting someone whose work that you find meaningful, and they're, like, real dumb, and they can't hold a conversation
when
with
you. They're not nice. They're not smart. They're not fun to talk to. And you're like, oh, that's no good.
It really does. I've had this happen where I've, for whatever reason, I've met some musicians that I really love, and I find them to be, like, true idiots when we talk, and it does put a slight damper on the music for me. And I was on the, you know, the Ted Leo played on the Joko Cruise this year, and I was a little bit nervous about getting to meet him, because I was like, I really fucking love this music. It's music that's, it is in the meaningful category for me. And I was like, what if Ted Leo's mean or dumb, or, oh my God, he's the nicest, coolest guy in the world.
Oh, I was hoping we could leave it a cliffhanger.
Oh.
Hey, Max, did you get your eyes
and you'll never know. You'll never know what happened.
What an asshole.
He is.
He's very kind, but he's just ridiculously smart and fast.
Oh,
he's
my
so
God.
Smart and so fast. And he's funnier than me, and it drives me fucking crazy to talk to him, because he's so fast.
He's just one of those guys of, I just want to be in his presence.
I know. Well, he and Amy were right down. They were like two doors down from us. Their cabin, stateroom, whatever. So we would see them in the hallways all the time. And, you know, I think they're both very, Amy certainly, very introverted. But, like, it was just really cool to just get to walk by and just get to, like, say hi and watch Ted Leo and David Rees, like, do a crossword together. It was like, it was joy.
I'm just going to mention the mashup cover Kelly Clarkson
since you've been gone
and
in Maps.
So I can put it in the show notes. Look at the
Wait,
show notes, guys.
They don't love you like I love you. Wait.
Oh God, that song. Ugh.
And listen, I'd fallen asleep taking a nap when that Sound Opinions came up on my Overcast. And, like, all I had to hear was it bottle and cork. No, it was, you know what it was? It was probably me and Mia. And like, it's he's one of those guys where all I have to just do is just hear a little bit of one of his songs and that's it. I'm done. I'm listening to Ted Leo all day. His shit is so good. I recently rediscovered, actually from that, I've just gone back to Brutalist Bricks, which is, do you have that album? Do you listen to that album, Alex?
Yes.
I think that is very much in our mutual wheelhouse.
Yes.
That is a very, very good album. And I listened to it when it was out, but I don't remember loving it. And it's so fucking good. Oh my God, what a good album.
It was one of those things where I was like, it's Ted Leo. But then it's like something that you just fall in love with deeply over and over and over again. This is more Dig Dug Max. I want more follow up that we missed last week when we were selfishly talking about. I don't even remember what the challenge was.
Oh, so remember I mentioned? So I started playing Destiny 2, and it's definitely been my de-stressor activity over the last couple weeks. So I've put a lot of hours into Destiny 2, and so if you mentioned, I remember maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago I was literally wearing an item called like refugee rags, and I was just getting killed left and right.
I've hit
the level cap. I'm max level now.
Oh my God.
So I got a message from a friend of the show, Matt, the other day, and he was like, hey, I'm just about to get out of class, and I saw on Reddit that there's a huge exploit in Destiny 2 where if you join one of there was a special clan event happening, and if you join one of the clans, there's like a loot chest that gives you clan loyalty tokens, and you can cause the chest, if you just run up and down a hallway back and forth, you can cause the chest to respawn and give you new loyalty tokens every time. So we both rushed the computer and logged on so we could get the exploit before Destiny closed it, and I spent like an hour and 45 minutes running up and down a hallway and then pressing E to open a chest, and then you run to the other end of the hallway so it resets the state of the chest, and you run back up and you hit E to open it up, and I collected like 600 loyalty coins, and then I turned them in for elite gear.
What a fun story for people who cannot do that anymore.
You're not going to
have any penalties on your account? Like, they're not going to kick you off? Like some?
I haven't been kicked off yet, and I have elite gear.
So what's that? You get better like armor things. You get guns. You get cool guns. Is that it?
No, the whole enchilada. Now I joined the
having explained all,
I like
that,
their colors.
All of the noises you just made with your mouth. The net effect of having all those loyalty coins, whatever that is you get to what? I'm just asking what that means in terms of the game.
I'm doing a bit based on the fact that I'm just running on a treadmill to get imaginary treats in a computer game. You get better stuff. You get more powerful guns. I deserve a treat. Now, this is my other follow-up from last week. It has now been basically 2 weeks since I heroically gave my spot up in the line at the Apple Store. And
amazing.
We're going on week number 2 of me getting no recognition from the Apple Corporation and no treat. Listen to me, Apple. I am owed a treat, and I did not get a treat, and you need to send me a treat. At 1917 North Elston, Chicago, Illinois, 60622. I will not rest until I get my treat for the Apple Corporation for heroically sacrificing my spot in the expedited pickup group to someone who was rightfully in front of me, even though I was put in the wrong place because of my 11:15 pickup time.
Mm. You know what you did? You know what you did, Apple? Shame.
I am owed a treat. Just give me my treat.
Hours can you guys go? Oh, I can't even. As Merlin would say, I'm not great with mouth words today, worse than usual. Like how many hours of sleep do you need to function as a human being the next day?
That's a good question.
It's a complicated question for me because it's not on any one given night. It's more of a cumulative effect of like
that was going to be my question. Do we assume normal sleep, whatever your normal sleep is, 6, 7, 8 hours, whatever your normal sleep is. If you have a bad night, what is the minimal amount of sleep in a bad night that can have you mostly okay the next day? Is that kind of a question?
Yeah, let's assume that you've had a good amount of sleep the rest of the week. You don't have any like sleep debt or anything like that. It's just one rough night.
For me, 5 is rough for the minimum. 4, I'm definitely going to need a nap. But I'm usually around 6.5, 7.5 hours a night and Fitbit tells you like you're up for an hour and you didn't know it. But yeah, for me, like if it's less than 4 or 5, I'm in a bad way.
The sleep researchers that I'm friends with have told me that even one night of suboptimal sleep can have an effect on your performance for like 2 weeks.
I'm gonna die when I'm 45.
So if you so and they were like,
luckily you eat
yeah,
right.
Yeah, good,
so.
Good.
Alex, that's a as the Germans say that prognanz, pregnant with meaning. Why do you ask that? What is a bad? Did you have a bad night last night? Is this a personal question?
Yeah, this is just an excuse and an apology to everybody because I'm not doing well. However, somebody our nice friend who is a barista is in the office today and made me a cappuccino with only water. I think that's what so that I can drink it.
Are you lactose intolerant now?
I mean, I'm a delicate snowflake. Anything can
kill me. You have a delicate system.
But I guess I'm not like...
You're no Griffin McElroy.
I do.
Stop eating chili.
Yeah, I'm not a diarrhea person. Usually if like I eat something and it's bad, instantly I get very sick and then I'm done. If I do throw up from this coffee for some reason, I'll keep it in, guys. You're welcome.
Keep it in.
I'm amazed that with all of your super tasting situation that you can palate espresso.
Well, that's the thing. I'm just taking big gulps. It's incredibly bitter, but it's like I can appreciate that this is very well made. Also, I like the cup. It's so fucking cute.
Oh. Alex, what are the best Kickstarters that you've backed, and what are you still waiting on, if anything?
Okay, let me pull this back up.
This is boring. I'm fascinated by this, but
no, I agree. You know what? People get back Kickstarter. It's great. Let me view all the project I've done. You know, I'm a big fan of that Cards Against Humanity game.
Did you back it on Kickstarter?
I think I gave like, oh no, because you were good guys and you didn't, you had the original game out to, you could, it was print and play for free. I like how I'm explaining what you did to you. So I didn't get it until it came to retail because I was in high school still. I am still waiting on my Vision AR goggles, but you know,
never back. This is my advice. This represents my personal opinion about how to use Kickstarter. Do not take it as any sort of anything other than just my own personal opinion. But don't. You will almost always be disappointed if you back first generation electronics on Kickstarter. Like they're almost. I almost would be hard pressed to find any example of first generation electronics on Kickstarter where people were really happy with what they got. I think you can get first generation hardware, meaning like craft items and things that are constructed and manufactured goods. But if it involves like programming, software, computers, microcontrollers, like, you are going to be disappointed. It is never going to work in the first generation.
The worst project, and I don't want to say the worst, but the one of the very few projects that wasn't fulfilled at all was it was really ambitious. It was 400 sizes of women's jeans, which was really cool. But obviously, they were like, wait, no, this is...
That's a lot of skis.
Yeah, just a couple.
That's a good scope on that project. Yeah. I feel like that'll get done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was fine.
Yeah, but what if somebody comes up with 401 styles of jeans?
My favorite recent one is the Complete Girls with Slingshots, which is a comic that I absolutely loved.
Right, yeah.
And they're reprinting the entire thing. It was a webcomic, and it's never been available in print. And also The Secret of Mac Gaming. I'm a big book Kickstarter backer. Just because I've always had really good luck with that.
Books are a great project back in Kickstarter because it's not hard for them to be made in an excellent way.
Mm-hmm.
First Kickstarter I ever backed was a book.
If you, the production, I mean, this is very minimizing, but you know, there's a known way to make books, mm-hmm. and you like make a decision about what kind of binding and what kind of paper and what kind of stuff. Oh, we got to talk about Liartown. And so like you then it goes all into like the production like of whatever makes it into like InDesign or whatever. But I see what you mean about the electronic stuff where like even in the best cases, you take a company like the company in Cupertino. I mean, they have buggy stuff in super well-funded hardware and software and God, imagine having to come up with the firmware and make it secure. And like, well, this seems like a terrible time to start just fucking around with Internet of Things devices if you don't really know what you're doing.
I'm excited about more hardware, but I really like a lot of the apps and games that have come out of Kickstarter. Like Dog Sled is this really fun iOS game made here in Chicago, and friends of the show are making a game, or sorry, not a game, an app called Allo, which is another one of these like self-care apps, but I might actually listen to it because it's very cute. Yeah, and like our friend who makes Welcome to Macintosh, really, Mark was really successful with that, and indie microblogging. Man, this is, everyone go to my Kickstarter page because all of these are really good.
I got a question for you, Documentary Girl. Mm-hmm. Setting aside something like the app documentary everybody's excited about, mm-hmm. how do you feel, this is a little bit of a loaded question, how do you feel about the success rate of supporting a documentary, maybe a fan-made documentary, but in whatever case, it's not people you would normally consider professional documentary makers. I guess I'm saying, I feel like the success rate on that is like pretty remarkably low. Yep. Like a lot of them just don't get made. Is it just me?
No, you are absolutely correct. Most filmmakers on Kickstarter, especially documentary makers, it's their first film. They don't understand. They always, like, even if you aren't making a documentary for the first time, you will always underestimate how much you need to shoot, how long it's going to take to edit. Well,
the other thing is, like, you don't know that you have a documentary until it's shot and you're looking at it and you're like, okay, there's a movie here.
Or until you've reached that point in the third act when you know it's really actually all about you. Ooh.
Right, yeah. It's like, how many documentaries, the story of how they got made is, I started filming this thing and then I filmed it for 6 years and eventually I realized there was enough footage for a documentary.
I'm so ready for that genre to be done with. It worked for Sherman's March to huge effect. It worked for Michael or Roger and Me, but like the fucking Paul Williams documentary drove me so effing crazy because of how much it really was about, like, I'm a quirky guy following Paul Williams and I'm really bothering him and it's part of the bit, and it's like, it's really, it minimizes the subject, you know, unless it really goes to what the thing is about. In the case of Sherman's March, like, I know that's artifice, but like, I bought it. I absolutely bought what they were selling with that, but that was what, 1987, like earlier, but like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, I've known people, I feel like there's like, I can think of, I won't say, but off the top of my head, I feel like I can think of like three different documentaries about bands in particular that just never made it. I didn't think the Silkworm one would ever come out, but it did. But there's been lots where it's like, it just never, hardly anything, like, it got some B-roll and then it just died.
This is actually probably the only actual piece of advice I have for Kickstarter projects that have any sort of film component. Do not ask for any money until you are in post-production, and only only rewards should be the film. Like, people don't, like, you are going to waste so much of your time with stickers and posters and stuff like that. Like, people don't care, they just want to see your movie and they want to see it as soon as possible, and time is always going to be the most expensive thing for a film. It's not going to be the equipment, it's going to be not just your time but the people you have to hire. And yeah, I would never.
That's really good advice. So why do you think that is? Like, or for either angle you want. Like, why do people are people being naive when they go into it, or is it as something that comes down to like sort of like y'all said, like, you don't know what the magic is until you've captured the magic and you can't like create that sui generis. Like, what causes that to be such a risk?
I think a lot of the naivete has gone away, but also what's gone away is grants for a lot of documentary films, or people don't know that grants exist and they don't know where to go, and they just fiction films have more success because you have more a better idea of like the scope, and you can, you know, a budget is easier to stick to.
Because fiction films have more success because they're fun to watch, because they're invented by people to be fun to watch. Documentaries, you have no idea if it's fun to watch until you've shot it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't know that you have an exciting ending until you have it.
Documentaries are bad.
I've been thinking a lot about this, keeps coming up just because I'm thinking about it, but also it just comes up. What was I listening to today? That I gotta learn the name of this goddamn podcast. It's one of the Ringer podcasts. It's the one about media. I just tweeted about it today. Greatest superhero movies of all time. Anyway, and listen to this podcast. But it was, what was neat about it was they were talking about the way that they rated it. It was based on some things having to do with box office, having to do with reviews. But the question that they asked all the people who participated inside the company was, the two questions were like, I think 1 to 10, like, how much would this be improved by being made remade today? But the really big one was like, how rewatchable was this? And I've just been thinking about this a lot. We talked about this on Back to Work yesterday. I've been thinking about this a lot with the music stuff we do. It's so interesting and seemingly random what makes something rewatchable or re-listenable. Do you know what I mean? It's like there isn't one thing that you can point to, and particularly, I guess, with documentaries. Isn't it strange that there are some documentaries you would never in a million years watch more than once? Because, mm-hmm. you know how it goes. But then there are some stuff like, God, I've been trying to get Syracuse to watch this thing on Netflix about this crazy marathon that called the Barkley Marathon, I think it's called. We're like, I could watch that over and over because the characters in it are so interesting. Something like Grey Gardens. There's these certain kinds of documentaries that like have such high rewatchability. Civil War, obviously. But do you ever feel that? Like it's hard to know whether something's going to be good. And once you've watched it, like, isn't it strange how some things bear such rewatching and other things just don't?
Do you have the feeling like a lot of times I'll walk out of a film and actually know like, oh, this is something I'm going to revisit over and over and over again, like Dear Zachary, which I don't want to say anything about except that everybody...
I've seen that movie so many times.
That's rough.
Yeah, it's so good. But I'm looking at this list, and obviously the first one, Let's just say The Dark Knight. I've seen this movie maybe a dozen times, and I don't know if that's because it's set in Chicago. I don't know if it's because I love Batman. It's harder for me to articulate why I enjoy watching fiction films, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, other than being, yeah, that's giggly, and I like the characters. Whereas, like, a movie like Drive, I have no idea why I come back to that over and over again.
I love that movie. I know. I feel the same way. As soon as that music starts playing, I'm so I'm so drawn into that movie.
Still,
I don't know why.
I haven't seen it.
It's okay. I mean, it's... You
I have it on the Plex, and I don't know. When's the right time to watch Drive?
I don't know if it's you. I don't know if it's a you movie.
Sometimes I'm in a social situation where people ask, what's your favorite movie? And I know that what I'm supposed to say in the situation is like a classically good movie. So like, you know, the coolest person in the room. Listen, you're hanging out with Ted Leo, right? And everyone goes around. They're like, hey, I know what we'll do. Let's all go around and say our favorite movie. And it comes around to Ted Leo, and he's gonna say, you know, fucking Raging Bull. You know, and it's gonna come around to me, and I'm gonna be like, the Avengers. Like I don't know. I always think of the lamest movies pop into my head. Like I don't have a favorite movie that's on my little note card that I can rattle off that sounds cool. That's genuinely my favorite film. Like
that's not how that stuff gets encoded. It's encoded, I feel like, at a much more emotional level. And again, I talked about this with Dan yesterday, but like with kids' movies, some are so much more imminently rewatchable than you remember. And like, you don't think of watching that movie, but like once it's on, you're like, fucking A, I love this movie.
What do you say? What do you say when someone asks your favorite movie? What do you say versus what is actually your favorite movie? Alex, what do you say is your favorite movie?
I say Totoro, and it is true.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really good movie.
That's a very good, cool guy pick.
Yep, because it is.
You know what's great is it's a universally beloved movie with mm-hmm. artistic yep. merit, and it doesn't seem like you're trying too hard,
yep,
right?
It's perfect. Yeah. I have an easy out with this
it's
one.
It's not like a pedant's choice. It is. It's not a pedant's choice. It's a cool choice.
Not much happens in it.
And when people ask what my favorite documentary is, I say Grey Gardens.
Why Totoro instead of...
Spirited Away?
Kiki.
Kiki's
the best movie, but it's not my favorite.
Yes, Kiki is a very close second. Like that, I would fudge it a little bit, and like Kiki probably, some days Kiki is my favorite. But Totoro is something
so
that absolutely everybody can watch at any age and enjoy it, and if not, they're a monster. Like, you can be bored by it, but if you don't enjoy, like, if you can't get a kernel of joy out of that movie, you are a monster, and you make me sad.
my wife does an amazing impression of the mother. It's shocking. I'm going to get better and come home to you. Is that Maze Corn? I love Maze Corn so much. Oh my God, I love that movie so fucking much. That's a good question, Max. Do you have an answer? Because I'm still working on mine.
I think what I would say if someone asked me, if I'm hanging out with Ted Leo and we all go around and say what our favorite movie is, Christ, I think what I would say is something like, hang on, I'm like looking at my movie collection to see what I would, what sort of smart movie I would pick.
I mean, for me, the easy one that is true but is not interesting is Godfather 2.
Oh,
Godfather 2.
Yeah.
Unquestionably. Then there's a movie where if 1 second of it is on a screen, I'm...
Yeah, you're done.
I could... Yeah. Yeah.
The adult torture.
And that's kind of... What's ironic or funny is that that's kind of what happened to me with The Big Lebowski, which is one of my favorite movies, where I had seen The Big Lebowski. It used to kind of just show up on like USA or whatever. It used to just show up on cable back in the 90s, early 2000s when I had cable. And it was one of those where I watched it and I watched it again, and it just got funnier and funnier every time I watched it. But like, you can't just say to somebody, go watch The Big Lebowski 30 times and you'll think it's funny. I mean, that's stupid. Other ones like that.
I think if someone asked me my favorite film, what I would probably tell them the answer is would be, I think I would probably go with the Coen Brothers movie, and I would say, I might say, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? I think that's
really...
Oh. I think it's just like the most watchable film. I think it has like the coolest music.
Movie.
It's funny. Yep. It's got so many good set pieces.
It's got, what's his name, Delmar? What's that guy
with
the...
Yeah, it's so
funny.
It's
every, love him.
Every scene is just exciting, or maybe The Dark Knight. But I think the answer as to like what my favorite movie is probably the Barry Levinson comedy, Wag the Dog, which I think
I've never
like,
seen that. I think
it's my favorite film. It just has like the best script. It's like light. I don't know. It's just, it doesn't...
And that's kind of about a Clinton era thing of like creating a diversion from a scandal.
Yeah,
is
it's
that
these
what it
political
is?
Operatives who make a fake war to cover up that the president did a little Roy Moore action.
That's a okay. Perfect cool guy movie.
It's really not. It's really not. It's a really like, it's like not a cool movie. Like I couldn't say that to Ted Leo and everyone would be like, what? Like that's not a favorite movie, you know? But objectively, it is probably the movie I've seen the most.
But here's another one. Like this is not one of those you're not going to say to Ted Leo, but like When Harry Met Sally. I think that is a very, very good movie.
I've never seen it.
I have not seen
it either. I don't think about it very much, but when I do, I'm like, I'm delighted by that. And then there are some movies that I consider my favorite movies that I don't actually like that much anymore. Like, I like Princess Bride, but I think I don't like Princess Bride as much as I think I do.
Oh, man, I love... Mm. Oh, I've been thought
well,
about
I've
that
been
movie
watching
like
it for a very... I've been watching it for a very, very, very long time. And my daughter loves it, so that makes it fun. But, you know, my main thing is I just watch it and go like, oh, my God, the budget for this was like $16, and they did such a good job with it. Just the talent in that movie. Anybody want a peanut? So good.
Never go up against a Sicilian when death is on the line.
Have fun storming the castle.
For
oh, come
as long
on.
As I've been alive, since before I saw Princess Bride, my
okay,
family just now says, have fun storming the castle whenever we leave. We
and
don't say I love you.
The expressions and the waving that really bring it together. Oh, it's so silly.
I wasn't gonna laugh at that, and then you got the one line from that movie. Anybody want the peanut?
Anybody want the peanut?
I never know what to say. I feel like it's a very hard question. You know, picking your favorite album, I feel like you get as long as you don't pick a lame band, you get broad latitude to pick an album, and people are sort of like cool with, you know, like whatever emotionally resonates with you. But movies are like, man, I do not want to be judged for having the wrong favorite
and
movie.
Just, and too many angles where like, I was about to say like, okay, well, what about genres? Let's go to a genre. But even if you come up with a genre, like say fantasy, sci-fi, space opera, like a lot of people are going to go, oh, Solaris, the original. It's like, oh, okay, I get it. Like, you know, and actually that is a guy, I need to watch more of that guy's movies, to be honest, because he's constantly being name checked in like YouTube videos. And I've seen part of Solaris, and that is it.
Wait,
what's
who? Danny Boyle?
Guy? Yeah, no. No. What's his name? I think he's from Poland, I want to say. He's that really famous wackadoo director.
Is
this
Solaris by Danny Boyle? Is that the monster movie with
Andrei Tarkovsky?
Oh, yes.
He made lots of wackadoo movies that I need to see.
I thought it was a Danny Boyle movie.
Am I going insane? You're thinking of Sunshine.
Sunshine.
Yes.
Oh, whoa, Eternal Sunshine.
There's a contender for
Sunshine
favorite movie.
Sunshine and Moon. Be like, oh, yep, Sunshine. Moon. Gotta love
Didn't
that.
This come out in the
Sunshine.
Same year?
No. No, because Moon is also Danny. No, Moon is the
is,
guy who did...
David Bowie.
David Bowie. What? Moon is the guy from the Gong Show movie who's in Iron Man 2, Sam Rockwell.
Do you guys just have... Because you drink coffee all day, right, Max? Do you just have this taste in your mouth mm-hmm. all day? Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Duncan Jones.
Yeah.
Oh,
Duncan Jones.
Lord, he made a movie called Metro.
He's David Bowie's son.
I think he's kind of like Stephen King's son, where he tried to hide that for a while, and it lasted a good 15
baby Bowie.
Minutes.
He made the Warcraft. He made the Warcraft movie, which I saw with Trin, and I was a little bit too high to follow the plot, but I don't think it made a lot of sense. Certainly didn't look good. I think Sunshine, you guys, I think that might be my pick.
Oh.
No one would make fun of me for saying that Sunshine is my favorite movie, and it really truly is up there.
Ted Leo would give you a knowing nod and be like,
That's a cool guy movie to like, right? Yeah. It's like, and it's a little bit goofy. It's a genre film, so it doesn't feel like I'm trying too hard. You know?
I don't know anything about this movie. I'm so excited.
It's a perfect, in my opinion... It's a perfect film. It does have a bit of a divisive third act where it's sort of a love it or hate it thing, and I'm in the love it camp. But you'll love it. It's so fucking cool. Do not watch it with your daughter.
Respected on both sides. Wonder. They're going to butcher. That movie looks butchered. Wonder. I'm just looking at my movie selectinator. Oh, Justice League.
Oh, that's going to be rough.
Rough. Lady Bird. I want to see Lady Bird. I'm going to see that
movie. Looks. Oh, is that the LBJ movie that's out now?
Yes.
That looks great.
No.
No?
Yes.
There's an LBJ movie out. It looks really good.
Robert Caro.
With
what?
Woody Harrelson, also in Wag the Dog.
Wag the Dog, right. He's Woody from Toy Story, the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Do you want to hear something crazy? Did you hear I was reading an article about Pixar's like rendering capabilities recently, and it mentioned offhand in the article that their rendering capabilities now could render Toy Story, the original Toy Story, in real time.
Whoa.
Think about that.
I mean, it doesn't surprise me. It worries me about the future of Pixar and the remastering of digital.
You think that the temptation to futz with it is going to be so high?
I don't think the leadership at Pixar now would do that, but it just makes me think of like, if we can just throw this on our new iMac Pro and get it out there, why not? That would make me sad.
That's super interesting. Like when you think about when people are always trying to figure out, what's the Disney influence on all these different properties. The one I could see a risk coming, as you say, as more of the original leadership ages out, and you get more of, like, let's say for the sake of argument, Pixar gets to a point where they're not getting an extremely good movie every year or two, and there's the pressure to like go back and do the equivalent of what Disney did with like direct to DVD at one point, you know, where you'd want to go back and
the vault.
Beloved characters.
Well, Disney's new bullshit is that they have to do a live action. I assume this is, I don't actually know this, but I've always assumed that has to do with intellectual property reasons.
I don't think it is the case anymore. They kind of just rewrite
like,
the
why
law
are they doing
every
a live action Lion King?
Because the Jungle Book was really successful and John Lasseter, John Favreau has a lot of money and the tech is there. I don't know.
I mean, I'm excited. I thought the cast picture was cool, but and they are doing, I mean, listen, it's the fucking Lion King. I'm probably not more nostalgic for any media property than the original animated Lion King. I mean, I'm going to go see it, but like does that need to exist?
Well, does the Justice League need to
exist? I said that about Finding Dory.
I said that to a
friend of mine who works at Pixar.
Oh,
when they announced that Finding Dory was coming out, I said this to someone who works at Pixar, but I'm sure didn't really have a lot of creative input on whether this movie got made or not. But I saw that they're doing this Finding Nemo sequel. And that's probably one of the greatest movies ever made. It's a perfect film. Like you couldn't change one frame of that film.
I did not know we shared this opinion.
It is a perfect, perfect, perfect film. And I was like, this is not a story that I feel like could possibly be improved on by revisiting it. Right? Like all you're going to do is sort of bastardize it and rehash it and make it into tropes and revisit.
Just like the drag it through the nostalgia machine. It's
right.
That same,
it's like,
oh,
we got to see the shark again, and we got to see this guy again and that guy again. And I was so skeptical, and I was so worried about it. And I thought Finding Dory was a really delightful movie, and I thought that it did not tarnish Finding Nemo at all, and it built its own wonderful thing.
I loved it. I thought it was good. I thought it was fine. I think when it went off the rails, it got even better. When it got very, very silly at the end, that's when I finally kind of bought in. When it got so ridiculous with the big plan for how they're gonna
that's right.
Oh my god,
that was so funny. That was because I mean, like, it's so unusual to get into the third act of a movie and it gets stupid in a way that's good. It got so, you know what I mean? I mean that as a compliment, but like they made an animation movie, and instead of making everything work like the animation, like the real world animated well, they made a cartoon, and it was really fun.
I thought it was a total fucking delight, including the ending and the way they handled the characters. Very good. Let's see. We should probably get into the challenge in just a second, because I do think we're gonna have a lot to talk about. But let me throw out one other topic for everyone. So. I'm on my my iPhone X. As you know, I think we've discussed this. Every time I get a new iPhone, I reset my phone up from scratch. So I go set up as new device, and I reconfigure everything. And I evaluate individually, do I need this app or not? And one of my big changes I've made on this phone is I usually go through and delete almost all the Apple apps. But what I did was I kept the news application.
Oh, God.
Do you guys use the news application?
I delete it from everything.
You don't? Neither of you use it?
I hate accidentally hitting a link and launching that godforsaken app.
I was going to say, I don't know, maybe they've had a new version or something.
I have not spent a lot of time with it again. It really feels like one of the classic Apple shitty island. But like I'm open to the idea that it could get better. Are you enjoying it?
Yes, it's quite
That's
good
so
now.
Cool.
It is quite good now, and I was going to recommend if you I played with it when it first launched. I opened up for 10 minutes, and I was like, this is not for me, and I deleted it. But if you haven't looked at it since then, it may be worth opening up and just peeking through, because it actually has started to slowly replace Twitter for me in terms of a place where I got one of my first places to go for news.
Because it gets good at learning.
Well, I don't know. I just opened it up, and on the front page, one of the top stories is The Hill, Cards Against Humanity buying plot of land on border to stop Trump's wall.
Oh, that's a good app. That's a really good app.
Oh, and it has my YouTube video in there. That's nice.
Oh, nice. Oh, wow. It's
What's the video about, Max?
Anyway, play with that news app. I'm curious what your thoughts are. All right. Challenge, Alex. What?
No. We
edit that whole section out.
This is Alex
drinks coffee.
I mean, I gotta say, my headache has gone away. I feel a little perky. I wonder if the circles under my eyes are gone. What a day!
Are you vibrating? Do you feel like you're vibrating?
I think we finally figured out what the buzz is. It's Alex's heart.
Last week we had a bunch of boring opinions about the iPhone, but I have discovered something about myself with Face ID. I use my phone too much, you know, like in bed, and you wake up and my face like is just will not be recognized because like my eyes are twitching. I cannot open them wide enough for the phone to recognize it.
First thing when I wake up in the morning, when your whole face is like a lump of clay that someone sat on, and you try and open up the phone, and it's like, I do not know who this sewer mutant is.
Recently this year, I made a big change in my life in that I finally use my phone in the bathroom. Poops are much more exciting. Clash Royale, perfect time for that. But Max, have you done this thing where like you're looking down and it's like your face is all mushed and there's just no chin? Yeah, my face is not my face won't be recognized when I am taking a shit. So two times, you know, gotta put those digits in.
You should file a radar on that. That'd be fun.
I'll try. Face ID poop doesn't work. Dug a dig dug challenge. My challenge this week was to play the iOS game Clash Royale. And this was specifically from Merlin, because Max and I have been fans of this game for a really long time. And that was pretty much it. We left it open-ended. I requested that you join our clan, the IAP boys, because that kind of, you know, it's sort of fun. You can share cards, and we can talk about some of the game mechanics, and Max is better explaining that stuff. But Merlin, just right off the bat, did you enjoy this video game that we had you play?
I don't know. Should we play it together?
Well, we can. I think that could be a fun content. But so here's what I'm curious about. So I downloaded this game.
You're not actually curious what I think about this.
No, I am. Hang on a second. So I downloaded this game the day that it came out, and I just saw it. It was promoted heavily in the App Store, and I was like, oh, I got to see what this is about. And you know, I follow the gaming market on mobile very closely. And I played at the time it had a pretty quick tutorial, and I got into it and I was like, this is really fresh and interesting, like what they're doing here. It's very simple and there's not a lot, you know, you don't have to like learn a ton, but it's so deep. Like the strategy goes like so deep on this game. And I got hooked on it and I've played it probably every single day since for, I don't know, how long has this game been out? Like 2 years or something like that.
Perfect poop game.
I'm curious. Now, you just picked it up, and some of the changes that have happened since between when I started playing it and when you started playing it are there's like three times as many cards, so you have to learn three times as much shit because you have to know what all the little units are. And I assume there's probably more onboarding and tutorializing and things like that. Can you talk about what was the tutorial like? What is the game? Like, can you sort of set it up for us as the person who just opened it for the first time?
Yeah, sure. I don't play video games really at all, and I was very confused about what this even is. And I was confused about how anything I did with my finger had an actual impact on what was happening with the little people. Yeah, you go through this little, like, a five-step, like, here's learn how to do this thing. Here's how to move a thing to there, and then, like, how to attack and how to defend and how to defeat a bigger enemy. And I moved a giant and a fireball, and I made the arrow girls run around. And it's deeply, deeply, completely not understandable to me.
For our listeners who might not have played the game, Clash Royale is a MOBA.
I didn't know it was a card game, I guess.
Well, it's sort of a card game, so it's a MOBA. So there's two lanes, and at each lane there's a castle, and you're trying to destroy your enemy's castles, and they're trying to destroy yours. And the way you destroy castles is you have a deck of cards that you pre-build, like magic cards, before the game, and then your deck gets shuffled up and you get a random hand of cards, and you drag the cards down and drop them onto the field, and it spawns units on the field. And once they're on the field, you can't interact with them at all. So what's interesting is each unit has its own sort of AI that it behaves according to, so it'll take different pathfinding and it'll react to buildings and creatures in different ways. Sometimes it'll fight, sometimes it'll run, you know, and you learn all that stuff, and it lets you build basically almost like, you can almost think of it as programming, right? You're like programming these incredible strategies because you're like, I'm going to drop this guy here and then he'll do this sequence of events and then I'll drop this guy there. And there's also a chess element or a boxing element where you're like, if I do this, I know my opponent is going to respond like that and I can anticipate that and get out in front of it with this. And the mind game is really intense. So you play for 3 minutes against another person or until you destroy all their towers. I don't know. I think this is probably the most
explanation of it. And so the fun comes from learning which combinations and kinds of behavior. So you anticipate certain kinds of behaviors and you learn which combinations are effective against different kinds of things.
Yeah. So as with any sort of deck builder game, there's two games. There's the game and the metagame. The game is the little tactical decisions you make in any given match against a player. And then there's the metagame, which is you try to understand in the ecosystem of this game, all the millions of people playing it, what is the right deck for me to build to beat most players? How do I have the right count? You have to know, what are most people going to throw at me? How do I counter it, and how do I win? So there's the meta game of building your deck, and then there's the micro game of the game of playing your guys on the field. And where a lot of these games fall apart for me, so Hearthstone, Magic, is like, I really enjoy the metagame. I think that's so smart and compelling, but I find them deeply boring to play. Like, I burnt out so hard on Hearthstone. I think it's so fucking boring to play Magic the Gathering or Hearthstone. I just do not find the gameplay to be compelling. I don't think you have decisions that are that interesting. Clash Royale, the exact opposite. That game is so fucking fun and juicy to play. It just feels great. I love playing it.
If you're listening to this and you are very confused, one of my favorite things about this game is, what got me into it is I'm a big fan of tower defense games, which are typically like you have a thing that you somehow have to defend with whatever, if it's like weapons or little soldiers. There was a game called Field Runners that was like one of the first iOS games that was just so good. And they usually have like really simple mechanics. And so if you're into that, this is a game for you. But also there are different arenas in Clash Royale, which kind of correlate with your, would you call it like your skill level max? So like you can jump in and play people who don't really know the metagame yet. And as you like progress and get to these higher arenas or levels, more cards are accessible. So really, like, you start off with, like, 10 cards, and everybody has the same cards. So you're, like, the learning curve is the same for everybody. So if you started playing today, it's not like Overwatch or StarCraft or whatever, where you need to, like, get into Reddit and figure stuff out.
Guys, I think, cut off at all, but I think we should probably send out our secret signal to the Patreon backers, and we can start the calls coming in. We can keep talking, but
okay. So are we doing tippy toe telemetry?
No, kilojoules.
No. Cool.
Oh, kilojoules.
Which I need to learn how to spell.
Kilojoules! Exclamation point.
So guys, let's
wait. No, don't hit it till you hit it. Have you hit it?
Oh, I sent.
Fuck me gently. God damn it. This is not how this works, Max.
Okay, so guys, I think we should we're going to open up the phone lines now. We're going to send out our super secret signal. So here's the deal with this. Due by Friday, if you're enjoying the show, we actually put out a whole second episode every week. It's available only to our Patreon backers. You can give us your fucking money and get the second episode. You go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com, you sign up for $5 a month, and you get a second episode every week. We also are adding a couple of other fun surprises and benefits for people all the time. Lately, we have been experimenting in the after show with having people call in and tell us about their experiences doing the challenge. And this week, we asked people to play Clash Royale with us and give us a call in and tell us about their experience with the game. So you may see on Twitter that while we're recording, we tweet out our special code word, and that's out. And maybe we'll take a couple calls from listeners as we go. All right. Anything else we want? Before we get the listeners on, did anyone else have any thoughts on Clash Royale? Well, you and Alex can play and I can spectate.
Oh, interesting. I have a really embarrassing deck, but maybe...
I don't even know what I have. All I know is I keep dragging people until I'm dead. That's been a good strategy so far. All right. I'm opening. Yeah. Let me tell you something. I don't understand how Pokemon works. I don't understand how Magic the Gathering works. I played D&D up till about 1983, and I have not played a game since then.
I played Atari.
I have a Wii. Just so you know, when you guys say things like, oh, it's like this, it's like that, I don't even understand how Pokemon works. I assumed it's like marbles, but with electric boys, and then you steal other people's cards, right?
I mean, as with anything,
delicious gravy.
As with anything, like a new band or an art or whatever, there's like a learning curve, and you have to get. Yeah. And it's not fun until you.
I'm
get
not
over
complaining.
The
I'm just saying, like, I'm not trying to be all Marco on this. Like, is that something I have to have a PC to understand? Like, I honestly, this is actually completely baffling to me. I click on these icons. I don't know what they are.
All right,
so are you in the app right now?
You and Alex set up a game. I'm gonna bring a caller on.
Hello.
Hi, who's calling?
Hello.
Hi, hello.
My name is Nick. I'm from Portland. I'm currently in Philadelphia.
Hi, Nick from Portland. Currently in
Hi,
Philadelphia.
Nick.
Wait a minute. Are you in Philadelphia for PAX Unplugged, where I will be when this episode comes out?
Yeah.
Oh, I'll see you there.
Yeah, I'll see you on Saturday night.
Oh yeah.
Probably.
Wait. What's Saturday night? What's the cool thing I'm missing?
Yeah, I actually don't know either.
All right, never mind.
Is it a Saturday
night?
Well,
Max is in two panels.
Uh-oh, they're not at the same time, are they?
No, they're right after each other, but you know.
And what are they? I obviously know what they are, but could you say for our listeners?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. So the first one is 404ing it, breaking down the internet, and the second one is Celebrity Secret Hitler.
Oh, very fun. Those are going to be good. The Celebrity Secret Hitler is going to be very good this year. Let me ask you this. Have you been to Philly before?
I have not.
Okay, here's what you're going to do today. Do you have time today? Are you like getting into the city and all that today?
Oh, yeah.
Here's what you're going to do. You're going to go to Reading Terminal Market. You're going to go to... do you have a pen?
Yep.
Okay, you're going to go to Reading Terminal Market. You're going to find Denix, and I think it's spelled like I think it's spelled D-E, Dinix.
Is that Dinix or original Dinix?
It's a, no, it's D-I-N-I-C.
D-I-N-I-C?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you're going to get the original pork sandwich with broccoli Rob.
Original pork sandwich with broccoli?
It may be the best sandwich I've ever had in my life.
All right. I look forward to it.
It's an unbelievable sandwich. It's a perfect food.
All right. Sweet. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Now, did you do the challenge this week? Did you play Clash Royale?
I did.
Have you played it? Had you played it before?
I had not. I was familiar with like Clash of Clans and all that in college, and like absolutely loathed the format of most mobile games. And this one I actually really enjoyed, surprisingly. Probably my biggest frustration was how pay to win it is. But at the same time, the time gates were not terrible. And the pay-to-win aspect was cheap, and I totally caved and spent, like, $7 so far.
Wow.
I'm, like, top three in the fan clan right now, and been enjoying it.
Whoa, there's a fan clan?
Yes.
Shout out to the Powder Nation on Clash of Clans. Clash Royale. Very cool. Now, I'm curious about this. So you mentioned the time gate. So this is, like, a really sleazy thing that free-to-play games do, where they're basically, like, you can't... There's a timer ticking down, and you can't plant more soybeans until the timer is done. And it basically prohibits you from playing until you either buy coins to speed it up or wait. And so Clash Royale does have a time gate in that every time you play, if you win, you get a chest. And the chests take hours to unlock, and you can either pay to speed them up or you can just wait for them to unlock. However, what I like about it is...
And if you don't unlock them, you will get notifications on your phone while you're trying to put your daughter to bed, reminding you that there's a chest somewhere that you have not dealt with on your phone.
You don't turn the notifications off?
Well, I want the full experience of the game. If I'm going to be screwed, I really want to know when it's happening.
So if you leave those notifications on, Merlin, someone's getting fucked, and it's not going to be the app.
Oh, no, this is going to be, before we're done with the members episode, this is going to be off my everything. It'll be off in no time, believe me. Completely eradicated. I'm gonna burn this entire thing with fire once we're done. It's a fun game.
Oh, God.
It's got a pay-to-play aspect to it.
I do like that the time gate in Clash Royale, it doesn't stop you from playing. Like you don't earn a new chest if you win, but you can just keep playing, which is great because sometimes I take a shit for 2 hours and play 300 games.
Exactly.
That's 40. Is that 40 games? Is my math right on that, Alex? That he plays 40 games while he poops for 2 hours?
Seems about right.
if you account for if it's stopping and you got wiped till you bleed, 36 games. How's it going? How's Philadelphia? Are you glad you called in?
All right. Well, listen, when this episode goes out on Friday, any members of the Powder Nation that want to do a little meetup at PAX Unplugged, hit me up on Twitter and maybe we can meet up for coffee or something one morning while I'm in town. Love to say hi to all of the all our Philly fanatics out there.
We're not going to
Thanks for calling in.
Nope.
Thanks for calling in.
Thanks for doing the challenge. Merlin, you're going to want to install this app immediately.
Me? Oh, yeah. No. I'm going to give... What I do in the morning is I turn on all of my devices. I update everything. I check for updates. It's something I do every morning. As soon as I get home, I'm going to go home. I'll probably eat some ham. And then I'll delete everything. Just gone.
If you're not playing free-to-play mobile games, what do you do when you take a shit?
What do I do when I take a shit? I don't shit as much as I probably should. When I do, I will sometimes read something. One problem is that I'm a very, very efficient shitter. I have a lot of purposefulness and focus. I'm just and there's no stress to it at all. I make perfect poo very quickly, and I wash my hands and I'm off and out in less than 2 minutes.
You're an efficient shitter.
It's really a gift. Well, I eat a lot of protein. I don't bog myself down with a lot of carbohydrates.
That's my time.
I know. See, now for me, that's the shower. Now, when I'm in the shower, that's when I listen to a podcast. I'll listen to a John Dickerson. Yeah.
I've built a whole little civilization in the shower for myself. I've got my shower notepad and my shower pen, and I do the Aquanotes brand shower notepad. I've got a special speaker.
You're making a salad like Kramer.
I've got a special speaker, a special Bluetooth speaker in the shower that has a little button I can press to activate Siri. So if I think of something I need to interact with my phone or whatever, I can like press the little button and be like, Siri, remind me to eat at Denix when I'm in Philly.
Right.
When I was, I got a story that's better than a Tesla.
Okay.
When I was younger, my parents, it's not that they discouraged reading. They're just like, that kid does a lot of sitting around, much like I do as an adult. But they thought that I had a stomach problem because I would spend a lot of time in the bathroom. But I would do is just hide a book like underneath the sink and then just go sit in the corner of the bathroom.
I am so perplexed. Why did they want you to go outside and play soccer or something? Why would they not want you to read?
No, it was like, man, you really should go outside in the summer. But suburbs. It's hot. And we had a patio that slightly tilted so you would fall down on your Razor scooter. I had a tough childhood.
I have so many updates on the gift your family sent. Shall I save it for the after show?
Sure. Okay. Do we have another caller, Max?
Yeah, we have tons of callers. Should we talk to someone else?
Yeah, go. Call.
Hello, you're on with Due by Friday. It's Alex and Merlin in the morning. Who's calling? Hello, who's calling?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, it's great. Who's calling? Who is this?
This is Kellen calling in from Indianapolis.
Hey, Kellen from Indianapolis.
Oh, how do you like living in Indy?
It's cheap.
It's cheap.
That is correct, sir. I'm not going to say anything else.
Kellen, you ever go to Harry and Izzy's?
Oh my God.
Here's what you do.
you ever go to St. Elmo's or Harry and Izzy's? You get that shrimp cocktail.
Kellen, get a pencil.
Yeah, that shrimp cocktail is pretty good. It's like $45. It's like $45 for a shrimp cocktail, which is crazy. But
I think it's a little cheaper at Harry and Izzy's. It's the same cocktail sauce.
You're 70. Max is 70.
Why? I'm proud of myself that I know a little food item. Listen, I'm
Before
making small talk.
Before we get to your
talk.
Question, I'd like to talk about food I ate once.
The callers, they're calling in. They want to have a personal interaction.
They want to know what you ate one time.
Wow, thank you for giving us your money.
The callers, they want to call in. They want to have a personal interaction with the host.
Here's what you're going to do.
Listen, I'm making small talk with them. I'm meeting them halfway here.
So, yes. So Kellen, would you describe
Kellen,
your town?
Kellen, what's your favorite movie?
Don't overthink it. Don't overthink it. What? Just say it. What is it?
That's a hard question for me. I lived a weird childhood where I wasn't allowed to watch movies.
Don't give the cool guy answer. Give the real answer. What's your favorite movie?
I don't know. Mulan's the first thing that comes to mind.
Oh, nice. Good answer.
Let's get down to
Solid
business.
Pick.
That's such a good movie. and it upset Indiana and Mike Pence. So nothing wrong with that. You know, he was very upset by Mulan. Did you ever read that article?
He's not very happy about it.
No, he's not very happy about Mulan at all. Mother.
Now, did you do the challenge this week? Did you play the Clash Royale?
I did, actually, and I was not expecting to enjoy it at all. I have never enjoyed a mobile game before. Also, I don't even play normal video games, sheltered, childhood, whatever.
This is exciting.
But I really enjoyed it, and
That's great. I feel so vindicated when people like something that I like on the podcast. It's like...
You're like a real boy.
I feel like I won something. Now, Kellen, you ever go to Shapiro's Deli?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they have good corned beef.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. That's one of the great Jewish delis in the country. Now, I'm a big fan of the pastrami as well.
Now, Kellen, have you ever been to the Steak and Shake in Indianapolis?
Yeah.
Have you ever been to the TJ Maxx? How about that Panera? They're all great.
Whatever, we all know places in Indianapolis.
Lots of good places to buy a newspaper. It's a way to stay in touch.
Shapiro's is really good though. That's my pick
Star
of the
Journal?
Week.
What is that one? That's a
if
good
you're
one.
If you're in Indianapolis, you go to Shapiro's.
It's quite good. I've had it before.
You ever go to that mall with the good seating?
The thing is,
in there. It's real comfortable.
Indianapolis is like a combination of one giant strip mall, Harry and Izzy's, and then beautiful parks.
It's a convention town. Like the entire economy is just based on having conventions for things, which are mostly sports. And it's crazy. Like any sort of like corporate expense account restaurant chain is within, is like just in the, it's like all clustered around the convention center there. Like you've got fucking Dick's Last Resort and Benihana's and every, it's all right there.
I think there's a Champs.
There.
It's yeah. great.
It's all right there.
Yeah. Mm. We're into Hooters.
Yep.
I'm always really embarrassed. About once a year, we go to Indianapolis for Gen Con, and I'm always really embarrassed to like send over my receipts because they're all like sports bars or Steak and Shake, and like here's the 50 energy drinks I bought at TJ Maxx. Kellen, okay. So I'm really interested in that you liked this game, and you not only don't play mobile games, but no video games. What made you like this?
Well, I like playing board games, so it felt a lot like a board game.
Interesting. Mm-hmm.
I mentioned this earlier, but it has like a real chess-like element to me of like you have this real one-on-one, like you're trying to anticipate their actions and get in front of them, and it has a lot of like economy management. It really does have a sort of a systems thinking, like board gamey feel to me.
Yeah, definitely.
What is this the first Do By Friday challenge that you've done? Alongside the hosts?
I feel like I've done one before, but I don't remember what it was. My brother is also my roommate, and he's also a big fan.
Oh, thank you for your money.
Thank you for giving us your fucking money.
You know,
it would have been really easy for you and your brother to pirate our RSS feed, and you save that money up. You get a shrimp cocktail at Harry and Izzy's, but I appreciate that you both subscribed. That's very nice. Well, come say hi to Alex and I next year at Gen Con. We're usually in town every year, and when is that, in July?
You can find me at Steak and Shake around 2 a.m.
Boy, that Steak and Shake gets really overrun by the nerds.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
You try and get out of the convention center and get away from it, and there's like a fucking, you know, a Darth Vader trying to like order a hamburger with no meat in it or something like that in front of you in line. All right, thanks, Colin.
Isn't that nice? People calling in.
It is nice. It's I like the energy of it.
Wait. Okay. So on air, I do want to play Merlin in Clash Royale. I'm setting my screen to record.
Okay.
Oh,
really? We'll post a link to this video in the show notes.
Oh, God.
So Merlin, boot the app up. I'll take a call. We'll talk about food while you guys are setting this up. So
make sure they have.
Hello,
a pen
you're on
paper.
With Max in the morning. It's Do It By Friday. Challenge yourself. Challenge your friends. Hello, who's this?
This is Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Hi,
good.
Andrew.
Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Columbus, Ohio.
Columbus, Ohio. I don't even know what kind of food they have there. Like a rest stop on the highway is the. I think that's the only place I've eaten in Ohio. Now, did you play Clash Royale? Alex and Merlin are just setting up a game together.
Merlin, I'm waiting for a friendly battle from you.
Oh, she's looking for a 1v1 battle. Close your challenge first. Closing my challenge. God, this is fun. I can see why you guys love this.
Hey, spectate. I'm gonna commentate.
Great.
Okay, so we've got Merlin on the top. Now, Merlin, did you use your random name generator to come up with this name, Torsi?
Interesting.
All right, Merlin's on the top. He's sending a knight down the right channel, and we've got a strong counter push from Alex. She's got a witch advancing up that right channel.
Mm-hmm.
Merlin sent a bomber skeleton.
You're just gonna keep throwing.
Merlin sent a bomber skeleton
tower,
right at the tower with no protection. Yeah. It got killed immediately.
Yep.
Okay.
And then he sent arrows at the main tower. Merlin's activated the main tower.
I don't know what a P.E.K.K.A. does.
Oh, Alex has a minion horde tower down on the right channel, and she's got a rushing knight
right
into the king tower. Here comes the hog. This is going to be ugly. Oh,
yeah,
my God.
This is funny, guys. I can see why you like this. Okay.
Merlin, that was a very bad game.
You happy you beat Torsi, bitch?
Oh, poor Torsi.
Torsi's down.
Oh.
All right, let me.
Poor
I want to play Alex.
Poor Torsi.
No, Max, you're going to kill me.
I want to play Alex.
Oh, okay.
I want to play Alex. 1v1 battle requested.
Okay. Oh,
all right,
God.
Merlin, you're going to hit spectate, and then you can commentate on it.
You can
commentate on what's going on.
Oh, spectate.
I'm like 500 trophies.
Spectate.
See, now you know my deck that I'm playing. Fuck. Oh, God.
Okay, I'm spectating.
I'm still here, guys.
You know what? Calm down.
Okay.
Calm down, buddy.
There's a river, and it's like Missile Command with white guys, and now there's nines running around, and somebody's shooting arrows, and no one knows why.
Wow, I really baited that fireball, huh?
Oh, God damn
you're just
it.
You're just dropping that fireball
there's
right down
marks.
On my tower,
there's lots
huh?
of question marks, and now the bars are moving. Sevens, here comes sevens. Sevens are attacking with their bugles or megaphones. And they don't like that guy on the left. He's got a 2305 on his bar.
So
uh-oh,
Max
look out, here comes the flying nines.
Oh,
and a big four boy. Here comes big four boy. Big four boy's angry. 2534 shoots a cone at him. We're not sure why.
I've already lost this. I'm already done.
Oh, no, there's a spinning crown, and that went to the other side. Now there's a man
I think we're trading towers, but I've got your man.
He's got a beer keg, and he's shooting tennis balls at the nines. And now the seven boys got their megaphones again.
I'm done.
Ooh, that was ugly.
That was brutal.
That was ugly, Alex. You let my three musketeers right in there, huh?
Yep.
You didn't weren't going to stop those at all.
The lady tears just got right.
That's fun. That's fun.
I want Max to play Merlin now.
Why?
I don't know.
All right, okay, sure. Why not? That's
going
to be fun. This will be great.
All right, Alex, you're going to have to commentate.
I will.
Do we have any questions? Okay. A caller from Ohio, I already forgot your name. I'm sorry.
It's all right. I'm just listening. I'm Andrew.
Hi, Andrew.
Did you play the game?
I did.
What did you think? Tell us what you thought.
Hang on. It was crazy addictive.
Oh, good.
It's like they've got it down to a science now of how to make it the most addicting game of all time.
Do you play video games?
I just can't quit.
Typically?
Yeah, I got a PlayStation. I play a little bit. I don't consider myself much of a gamer, but it was a lot of fun.
Andrew, are you in our clan or are you in the Powder Nation clan?
I'm in IAP Boys.
Yeah, I'm in the Powder Nation clan.
Oh, okay.
Now I'm not in the Powder Nation clan, but what's going on in there? How many members? How many clan trophies? Who's the best?
Goodness, you're asking me too many questions I don't know the answer to. There's like 30-some people in there, I think.
Oh, geez.
That's pretty good, actually.
They're generous people. They've been giving me my cards and stuff.
Oh, that's nice.
All right. Thank you, Ohio caller whose name I forgot.
Andrew?
Again.
Andrew? I want to say Andrew.
Andrew. It could be Andrew.
Andrew, thank you so much for calling
thank
in.
Thank you for calling.
Andrew, I'm sure
Torsi loves you.
Torsi loves you.
Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Thank you. Bye. All right. Let's get one more. We'll get one more caller. We gotta wrap this thing up.
I gotta hit the jug soon.
All right. Let's see. Oh Christ.
We do.
See, well, now you have a perfect activity to do while you hit that jug.
Yeah.
All right. Hello. You're on with. Hello. You're on Dubai Friday. Do challenge your friends. Challenge yourself. Do it by Friday.
Hello.
Hello. Hi again.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
Yeah, no, I'm listening to you guys for like 5 minutes, I think. I've been listening. Apparently I was on already. My name's Lucas. I live in SF, but I'm from Brazil.
Sorry, I'm just using the jug, so I'm going to mute for a minute.
Wait, Merlin, you're peeing right now?
He's muted.
No, not while we're recording, no.
No,
he would never do that.
So
I've played it before. I was actually in the IAP Boys for maybe a day, but
oh,
I was kicked out because I was not a good player, basically. And my game has been Clash of Clans for a while now because you can automate it and use a bot to win the games for you, and you can just play it as
bad.
A farmer simulator. Yeah.
Mm.
That's basically what I've been doing for maybe 2-3 years now.
That seems boring. Why don't you get on, like, Stardew Valley?
No, but I play other games, and this is just, like, on the background, brawling and giving me money so that I can build whatever I want. It's dumb. It's just so that I don't need to play it because it's annoying to play. I prefer playing real games like Mario.
So really, you just came on to trash our favorite video game. Thank you.
No, but this is Clash of Clans, not Clash Royale. Clash Royale is the whole other thing. Yeah, I'm not good at it. Yeah.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for calling. Jesus, I'm winded.
All right, let's take a little break. We'll regroup. We gotta do a real fun after show for people. A lot of energy. A lot of laughs. The fun continues on the after show. You go to giveusyourfuckingmoney.com. You're going to get that second episode. We're going to regroup. It's going to be really funny. Alex, was there something you wanted me to talk about in the after show?
I want to know how you got to last episode.
Oh, yeah. I've been walking to work a lot. We can talk about that. And then, So I'll explain why I'm walking to work. And then, we pick our challenge. We got to pick our challenge.
I've thought about this like every day since last week.
All right. Goodbye.
Also, presents. I'll report back on the presents that Alex and her family sent to my daughter very sweetly.
All right.
Do we actually want to take a pee break?
Oh, I just peed. I got to empty the jug. I got a full jug now.
This is so upsetting. Do you really pee into a jug while you're recording podcasts?
No, I'm a grown man, Max. So why would I do that?
Oh my God.
You're doing a bit, but do you actually? It's very upsetting that if you do that.
Oh, no, I would never do that, out. Max, don't worry.
Does your daughter come in?
I can't tell if this is a bit or not.
No,
oh,
I'm just kidding.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
I've been in that office.
Do you want to hear a slosh around?
Yes.
Oh my God.
Give it a little slosh.
No. All right, I'm gonna go pee like an adult.
Usually makes more noise, except it's full.
Oh my God!
Empty it.
Oh my God!
It's a Clorox bleach
ending.
Bottle.
That's our ending.
Yeah.